south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Okay, I'm roughing it today because my regular audio equipment's on the blink. By the way, for all of you who sent me emails about last Sunday's show not being me, seems like there was another show in my place, some show about aging. Well, so much for first world details, huh? First, some COVIDian news you're never going to get anywhere else because, well, I'm getting it from Latin American newspapers in Spanish that you'll never read. Did you know that Ecuador, you know, the country that International Living touts as one of the best places for expats to live and retire, though I beg to differ, I always have. Well, get this, they rank first in Latin America for the percentage of elderly getting that wonderful and popular vax. Yep, they've got 95% fully vaxxed. Meanwhile, the Ecuadorian government Monday announced it'll purchase 267 new ambulances. So why now? Well, according to this damaging report, more than half of all their ambulances in the country's public and social security hospitals are out of service. More than half. Turns out a study commissioned by the Ministry of Health found that more than 100 non-working ambulances were stored in hospital garages and in private repair shops and just left there because no money had been allocated for the current fiscal year for any kind of maintenance or repair at all. Hey, does that ring a bell? How many times have I said on this show, I've been saying it over and over again for years and years now, that the word maintenance just is not part of the Latin American vocabulary. Oh, of course, the word repair is reparar because when something breaks, you fix it or try to fix it. And man, are Latinos good at recycling things. Man, they can make things last forever. For example, the washing machine and refrigerator might be rusted out and look like hell, but they still work. But regular maintenance? Forget about it. Oh, and notice carefully that this report says half the ambulances in the national healthcare system. We're talking about public, that is government hospitals and clinics. Meanwhile, private ambulance services are pretty much 100% in operation. Why? Because people actually have to pay to use them. That's why I always recommend you should get on an ambulance pickup plan, a private ambulance plan, like one of the really good ones I mentioned before called Alerta Medica. It costs a couple hundred bucks a year, but they come with an emergency medical team right to your door, and you could have up to 12 visits a month. How about that? Not 12 visits a year, 12 visits a month before you get extra charges. You can look back in the archives and find out the details on that. But that Alerta Medica service is now in most every Latin country except, surprise, surprise, Cuba and Venezuela. I wonder why. Oh, and there's more to this public ambulance story in Ecuador. Did you know that most of those ambulances were donated by first world countries like the U.S., Switzerland, South Korea, Japan, Singapore, etc.? Doesn't that kind of make you sick? Meanwhile, just yesterday, there was an article in the biggest Ecuadorian newspaper that says, and I'll paraphrase, Vice President Alfredo Borrero has visited more than 50 public hospitals since June of 2021 and called the broke-down ambulance problem indefensible. He says, quote, how can these ambulances save lives when they don't even run? He says, this is an egregious example of the problems faced by our public health system and one that must be addressed immediately. Yeah, right. I've been hearing that same old tune for 30 years. My question is, why did you accept those free ambulances? And you knew damn well you couldn't maintain them, you dumb shit. This is supposed to be a shocking surprise or something? Don't make me laugh. The vice president knows the score exactly. Because, you know, this sort of thing is not new at all. Every Latin American country has the same problem when they get free stuff. No exceptions. Yeah, it's me, Johnny, again. A little comment here. Tell you what, if you're down here in Latin America, if you're driving along in any Latin American country, Honduras, Brazil, Guatemala, Panama, notice when you drive past a big municipal police station, whether it's the local or national police, they usually have different uniforms and different cars, but nevertheless, you'll see in the back or around the corner a parking lot just loaded with broken down police patrol vehicles, either all smashed up or missing vital parts. Turns out every Latin American police department has a police car boneyard that just keeps filling up and filling up with junk cruisers until they're piled on top of each other. In fact, it's been claimed, and I've heard this from Latin American cops myself, There are more cruisers wrecked and damaged in the police boneyards than there are in decent condition operating on the roads. And again, a huge percentage of these vehicles, when they were brand new, were donated by idiot first world countries that think they're doing a good deed. And it always blows my mind, and it makes me feel kind of lousy, when I'm thumbing through one of the local rags, and I see a big, happy photo op of some local political hack, usually a scumbag, pot-bellied mayor or governor, shaking hands with some Swiss guy or gringo or NGO organizer or South Korean diplomat, all joining hands in a ribbon-cutting ceremony, announcing the donation of 10, 20, or 50 cop cars or ambulances. Such a heartwarming photo op, huh? A benevolent first world country opening its heart to a poor, needy, underprivileged population. Sadly, and through no fault of their own, short of resources. How nice, huh? But they'll never do a report on what those vehicles will look like in just 2 years. Most ending up as junks or in the boneyard. Just makes me sick. But you know, in the first couple years I was down here, I used to think, hey, isn't that cool? I was all for it. What a nice humanitarian gesture. And that's, you know, pretty much what every newbie, gringo, and expat thinks and feels when he sees that stuff. First couple months and years he's down here, too. Till he realizes it's just a sad public relations gambit. Doomed to fail, like almost every freebie. And it doesn't matter if it's a government or private charity. The only thing giveaways do in the long run is give the donor a short-term dopamine feel-good rush. We all know one way or another what that feels like. Hey, it even happens when you buy Girl Scout cookies. Do they still have Girl Scout cookies? Do they still have Girl Scouts? I know the Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts are bankrupt and in big trouble with too much touchy-feely stuff going on. But you knew that already, right? Hey, I was in Boy Scouts, and looking back, I recall one of my troop leaders was a strange, kind of nervy, odd duck kind of a guy. And looking back, thank God, I'm glad I never got stuck alone in a tent with him. Some of my buddies did, but they're not talking. I guess we all had a few close calls as kids. How many did you have? Oh, and just one more sad piece of news out of Ecuador. Turns out the Ecuadorian Health Ministry has reported that the vaccination of high school students ages 12 to 16 is underway now and should be 100% complete by mid-October. Scary, huh? Yet for me, that's another reason not to hang your Plan B hopes on moving to Ecuador, no matter what International Living says. In fact, it's almost as if whatever International Living recommends, in a few short years, it turns into a bust. Meanwhile, in other Latin American countries where very few people are vaxxed, like Guatemala, Bolivia, Peru, El Salvador, and a few others, did you know, and it was a surprise to me when I heard this, I think, about 2 weeks ago, that the governments in those under-vaxxed Latin American countries have really stepped up and have finally done something worthwhile and notable for their own COVID-iot panicked public? Let me fill you in on this, and it's something you won't hear in the first world media. In fact, they don't want you to know about it, but it's a big news item in Spanish, and I'll translate it for you. Let's start out with what's happening in El Salvador. I have this news blurb in Spanish, and it says, for a few weeks now, Salvadorians have received a blue box at home, a little kit, with the label, Outpatient Treatment for COVID-19. That's what's printed on the box. Part of a government health strategy to care for people who have been reporting to the government health care agency that they have symptoms associated with the coronavirus. The government, you see, has a phone number and website to report if you've got symptoms. Now, here's the part that actually makes the government look smart. It says, the kit contains acetaminophen, Tylenol, aspirin, loratadine, which is an anti-allergy medicine, ivermectin. Wait a minute. Ivermectin? Yes, the dreaded horse dewormer, but there's more. Azithromycin, an antibiotic, vitamin C, vitamin D, and zinc. Where have we heard about those medicines before, huh? They've already distributed 100,000 of these kits. That's in El Salvador. Same measures with exact same medications have also been distributed in Guatemala and now in Bolivia, who've also distributed over 100,000 kits to the homes of people who've reported symptoms to the government health agency. Meanwhile, in Peru, the Social Health Security, El Salud, announced that since July, they have been distributing hundreds of thousands of kits containing azithromycin, ivermectin, and paracetamol, which is an anti-inflammatory pain reliever, along with zinc, vitamin C, and vitamin D. And they're giving that kit to patients diagnosed with coronavirus in healthcare facilities. Turns out if Peruvians report to healthcare facilities and do not require hospitalization, they immediately get that kit and are sent home. Now, aren't you amazed? And isn't it funny that ivermectin is part of the treatment plan approved in various Latin American countries for patients with symptoms and patients at risk? For example, people who are obese, with diabetes, high blood pressure, and in pregnant women. Yet, in the U.S. and most first world countries, you can't even get ivermectin, and if doctors start talking about it, they get canceled. By the way, if you're in El Salvador and you have symptoms, you go to the nearest hospital or clinic. If you test positive, they give you a medical quarantine order to stay at home, and they hand you that little blue kit. Same thing goes with Guatemala. Oh, and by the way, when you hear this, you're either going to laugh or you're going to cry. According to the Guatemalan National Health Service, they've invested $650,000 in the acquisition of 100,000 of these kits, making the cost of each kit $6.50. Let me repeat that. For $6.50, you get full COVIDiot treatment starting with acetaminophen, Tylenol, loratadina, anti-inflammatory, aspirin, ivermectin, azithromycin, that's an antibiotic, vitamin D, zinc, vitamin C, plus a little pack of rehydration fluid. Whatever that is, probably sugar water. And it all comes in a nice little blue pouch for $6.50. Meanwhile, up in the States where a simple COVIDiot antigen test costs $35 and a PCR test, which doesn't work, $100, all I can say is follow the money. Oh, by the way, if you want a picture of this little kit, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll ship it off to you. Oh, and I should tell you, I've been getting lots of people sending me emails with success stories using ivermectin. And not just because they have worms or a horse with worms either. I'm talking about gringo listeners up in the States and gringos and expats down here in Latin America, too. And you know, for all the emails I've gotten saying the stuff works, I've got zero emails saying, Johnny, sorry, it didn't. I took it and it had no effect or I got worse. Only dozens of positive stories, like this one. From Mr. R in Mexico, he says, Johnny, ivermectin works. I just took a 3-day course per the protocol on the web, and came out feeling just fine. Definitely no worms either. Though I do occasionally have the urge to run the quarter mile and eat some oats. Anyway, he says, I took 12 milligrams of ivermectin a day, one pill of 6 milligrams twice a day, for 3 days, 36 milligrams total. I would have gone the full recommended 4-day course laid on folks who feel COVID-19 is burrowing into their chests. But like a lot of folks, my blood pressure began getting a little lower. And by the fourth morning, I was feeling a little lethargic. So I checked my blood pressure each morning and didn't take the last 12 milligram dose for the fourth day. He says the standard anti-parasite regimen is one dose of 12 milligrams and no more. Though it depends on your kilogram body weight. For a healthy gringo like me with a six-pack dormant for ages but somewhere in there, I decided to take over twice the recommended anti-parasite dosage. Overall, Johnny came out feeling good. Along with that, I took 50 milligrams of zinc once a day and one tab of hydroxychloroquine since my objective was to mitigate a few stray odd symptoms I had over a year since my contraction of whatever it was last summer. Could have been COVID-19, which hit me with a little brain fog, too. But guess what? The ivermectin treatment did a lot to erase all that. I really am feeling pretty freaking good, he says. If it does indeed bind spike protein, then perhaps I purged a bit of it. Purged a bit of that acquired toxic load. Again, I tested positive a year ago, last summer. Meanwhile, in Mexico, the local Mexicans are loading up on vaccines. And if it's true, the vax people are spreading spike proteins in various amounts. How much of that is floating around, we'll never know. Anyway, Johnny, any sub-moron telling people ivermectin is nothing but horse dewormer and will put you in a coma is talking out of their anus. By the way, he says, I went out and bought $200 worth of ivermectin. That's for any friends and horses that come down with whatever, including worms, and want relief. As for my vaxxed brothers and sisters, taking ivermectin is still worth a shot, if indeed this spike protein is ravaging the body with microclotting and whatnot. We've all heard the reports. As for me, I continue to dose up once a month with ivermectin, which along with daily zinc and healthy vitamin D, I get most of my D from being out in the sun, he says, that seems sufficient for me. That should ward off the plague, he says, and any other voodoo claims. Signed, Mr. B in Mexico. Well, thanks for that, Mr. B. Glad to hear you've got it all under control, but I'm still meeting all kinds of expats, most exclusively, by the way, those who live on or near the Gringo Tourist Trail.
Yeah, a lot of them are woke, all right, who are totally into getting vaxxed. They watch nothing but Lame Street News and CNN. They don't know any Spanish. They have no idea so many Latin American country governments are actually giving away ivermectin kits. It's just really sad how brainwashed first world gringos are, even so many of them who've made the move with the plan B. Though I have to admit, almost all the expat vaxxers I run into seem to have worked at one time for government. Or are, you guessed it, retired teachers. We're talking about some very woke people here. Thank God they're mostly concentrated in gringo areas and tourist spots. Though I have to admit, I'm hearing from some gringos and expats who got the vax very early, the gung-ho ones. They're starting to get nervous. They're worrying. A lot of them seem to be coming to their senses and getting less and less woke. A lot of them are seeing that the narrative just doesn't hold up. But they've been vaxxed. No turning back now. Now, I think we've exhausted this COVIDiot theme for today. But there are three simple questions that remain. Three simple questions even a moron could answer. Number one, if your mask works, then why do you care if I don't wear one? Duh. Number two, if your vaccine works, why do you care if I don't get one? Double duh. And if I had COVID and have natural immunity, they say half the population's there already, then why should I be required to join the vax crowd? Studies most recently out of Israel prove people who have had COVID are dozens of times more resistant to the variants than vaxxed people are. I mean, look, if you have polio or smallpox, do they force you to get the polio or smallpox vax after that? That never happens. And if the vaxxed are so dead certain about how effective those things are, why in that do they even care about anyone being unvaxxed? Yep, those are three simple questions a moron should be able to answer. But neither the media maggots that kiss Fauci's ass or expert liars like Fauci himself
will ever give an adequate response.
Why? Because it would blow their whole narrative. All right, moving on to a few words about Bitcoin. You know, we've been talking about Bitcoin on this show for 9 or 10 years now. And some of you are now millionaires because of it. And some of you are just, well, just pissed off because you never pulled the trigger. And so I do get the occasional email from the disgruntled people who didn't get in for whatever reason. And one of their key points against it is the huge amount of energy it uses. You know, they cite environmental concerns and all that. Of course, they're sending me emails from their iPhones that are made by Chinese slave labor. Oh, and you know, people sending me emails about their concern about Bitcoin's energy use. They don't, of course, use any plastic around the house or have any big old gas-guzzling SUVs in the garage. No. And none of you guys and gals complaining about Bitcoin energy use have that typical beautiful American lawn either, do you? Which only comes at the price of many bags of fertilizer and pesticides. Of course, all you energy-conscious Bitcoin dissers, you're all living in log cabins off the grid like Ted Kaczynski, right? But seriously, though, they do have a point about Bitcoin being an energy hog. Though, they almost never consider the fact that Bitcoin eliminates the middleman in the banking industry. You must fully understand that Bitcoin and the other cryptos eliminate third-party intermediaries. That would be banks and financial institutions. It's only you and the other person involved in the transaction. That's why they call it peer-to-peer. Banks make all of their money as intermediaries,
taking a cut and a slice and a percentage off every transaction.
That goes for Western Union, MoneyGram, and credit card companies, too. But what's that have to do with Bitcoin being an energy hog?
Imagine just one bank branch.
How much energy did it take to make and fabricate the brick, the mortar, the metal, the glass, and the machines and lifts and drills and trucks and manpower it took to make a bank branch? Then consider how much power the thing uses day in and day out. Air conditioning, heating, computers, lights, internet connections. And there's the energy it takes for all the workers at the bank to get there every day. Buses, taxis, cars, metros, they all use fuel. Energy. And Bitcoin and cryptos being peer-to-peer, they eliminate those middlemen completely. So, with more crypto adoption, there'll be fewer and fewer banks and bank branches. Imagine all the energy saved when hundreds of thousands of banks close. Because people are able to bypass them. Why doesn't mainstream media mention it? It's obvious, right? It's better for the banksters to paint Bitcoin and cryptos as energy hogs, to slow down acceptance and get laws passed restricting their use. Why? Because the banksters stand to lose everything. They just hate crypto mass adoption. Again, just follow the money. Who are the biggest advertisers in mainstream media? Big pharma, insurance companies, and
big financial and banking institutions. And Main Street media will not bite the hand that feeds it. Just look back at the tobacco industry. In the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, they were the top advertisers on TV and radio. Yet it took them 30 years to pass laws to even put mild and gentle health warnings on cigarette packages. And the inside whistleblowers, the tobacco chemists and scientists, who in congressional testimonies in the 60s said cigarettes are nothing more than a nicotine addiction delivery system. Well, in the end, they got steamrolled. They got crushed. They got the Julian Assange treatment. In much the same way, the banksters and big finance are trying to do that to crypto. And you know, the funny thing is, a lot of the really old billionaire guys, like Warren Buffett, for example, they hate cryptos. Buffett himself has said over and over in interviews that crypto and Bitcoin are rat poison. And you know, when people like Buffett talk, the financial world listens. Why not? He's been such a hugely successful investor. And so novices and people who look up to guys like him, they hang on to his every word. Like he was the ultimate financial genius, a guru. And he was in traditional financial areas like, for example, Coca-Cola and airline stocks. But he's made some terrific errors too, because he's an old guy and only knows and is comfortable in traditional finance. And cryptos and internet businesses are a completely new animal. Warren Buffett's not interested. He doesn't even want to learn about that stuff. Need proof? Back in the year 2000, there was a huge financial seminar called the Sun Valley Conference. You can go back and see it all on YouTube. Turns out there was this guy named Jeff Bezos. You may have heard of him. Explaining to everyone at his presentation at the conference about his company, Amazon. It was up and running, but yet to have made any money. He was in the process of building the connections in the supply lines. He was trying to drum up investor support. And the speaker that came on directly after Jeff Bezos? None other than Warren Buffett. Up to that time, the greatest investor of all time. First thing he said about that concept called Amazon. Sounds interesting, he said, but I'll never invest in that. I don't get it. You're not making any money, and I don't have any confidence in that idea. And at that time, Amazon was around $100 a share. And it dropped down to $12 later that year. In other words, it lost 85% of its value in less than 6 months. Same kind of roller coaster ride cryptos and Bitcoin have been on. And today, Amazon's at 3,500, one of the top five companies in the world. And Warren Buffett does not want to be reminded of that. He, the guru, missing out on one of the biggest explosions in shares in history. So he was wrong, terribly wrong. Meanwhile, nearly all the OGs like Buffett hated crypto at the beginning, though now 80% of them are right on board. I get it, it's hard for those successful OGs to admit they were wrong. It was just too strange and geeky for men who didn't grow up with a cell phone in their hands. Though little by little, they're all coming around. Many of them being dragged into it kicking and screaming by younger board members. Enough said about that. All right. Changing gears again. You've heard me say over and over again that the more gringos pile into a country, the more local governments put the squeeze on us, whether it's taxes, fines, or other ways to gouge us. There is no better example than Costa Rica, where the cops just love to pull over rental cars, almost always driven by gringos, of course. Cops spot them easily because rental car companies buy the same make and model by the dozens. I've watched the cops pick on gringos many times. In fact, I've seen local cars, absolute pieces of junk, blowing smoke and breaking all kinds of transit rules. They'll pass a police checkpoint and the cops won't stop them. But they'll pull over the next car that's obeying all the rules because they notice it's a rental car that surely has a gringo in it. Oh, and you longtime listeners have heard me mention that the transit police in Costa Rica are connected directly to the airport and immigration. So, for example, if you get a $500 fine, yeah, there are lots of $500 fines in Costa Rica. Like, for example, making an unauthorized U-turn, even if it's not posted. U-turns are one of their favorite ways to nab you. Well, you might think, like any other foreign country, screw them, I'm not going to pay, I'm leaving anyway. Well, not so in Costa Rica. You get a transit violation, though I don't know about parking tickets. They won't let you out of the country until you pay. I've not seen that in any other Latin country so far. But I'm here to tell you the next Latin country to buy in will be Ecuador. In fact, some crazy crackdowns with driver's licenses are happening right now. When I first found out, I couldn't believe it. Just listen to excerpts from this article. Ecuador's Agencia Nacional Tránsito, ANT, have been publicizing lately in the media. If you've noticed your driver's license has been invalidated, it's probably because you got it illegally. Though even if you got it legally or think you got it legally, there's still a chance it's been inactivated. So you'll have to go down to an ANT office and present the license along with an endorsement from the driving course you took. Now, that might not sound like a big deal, but the following is. Turns out, if you got your license legally, but somewhere along the line paid to have your points decreased or fines eliminated. That would show up, it says, as an unsupported modification, which is a crime. And they will definitely not reinstate your license. Now, this is the crazy part. Adrian Castro, director of ANT, announced that they have found 35,000 cases of falsely issued licenses. The thing is, you see, many thousands of gringos are driving illegally because they couldn't pass the written test to save their life. The written test is in Spanish, and instead they just pay somebody to pass it on through. However, that also means there's no written copy of a test in the file. So then what do you do if you're part of that big group of gringos driving illegally? Well, if you got your license fraudulently, you need to go down to ANT voluntarily and turn in your license. You'll then be told the steps you need to take and the fine. But your license will be canceled. It'll be revoked. Now, according to Ecuadorian lawyer Juan Segovia, a specialist in transportation and license issues, he says he has cases where gringos paid up to $5,000 for a professional license to drive a big semi-truck, and from $200 to $1,000 to receive a regular particular driver's license. He said that though these gringos have committed a crime, they've also been scammed and cheated by these so-called license agents and expediters. He says if you have one of these deactivated licenses, the police can detain you and your car. Now, to me, Johnny, again, it just looks like a way for the government to extort more money from gringos and expats who they know will pay. They've got the dough. Bottom line, the transit department is saying if you answered an ad and got a license that way, connected with some expediter through the internet, if you never went to driving school or took any written tests and got a license, you better not risk driving until you go down to the transit department and fix it. All right, my two cents in all this? You've heard me say this before. You can't get a license in a Latin country without being a resident. But your U.S. license, as long as it's valid, and sometimes if it's not, will serve you. However, if you're living in Latin America, eventually you'll need a local license because your U.S. one will expire. And in order to get that one renewed, you have to go back up to the States and prove you're living there. You have to show them utility bills and such with your name on them. That's sort of the new rule. States have been getting stricter and stricter about it. So if you have your residence down here in Latin America, you can just go to a regular driver's school, and they generally guarantee you'll pass and get a license. And as far as taking that test in Spanish, yeah, they'll help you through that too. Don't worry. Now, what I just said applies to most Latin countries off the gringo tourist trail. Though, in places where gringos are piling in, like Costa Rica and now Ecuador, as you can see, they're out to gouge gringos. So there's just one more good reason why having your plan be off the gringo tourist trail is a really good idea. South of the border, you've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.